this time.
Matt Everett, and you're listening to The First Time. This is the show where we meet some of the most influential and best-loved musicians around and take a look at the pivotal first musical moments that made them who they are today. And on this, the first episode of a new season of The First Time, my guest this week is a producer, songwriter and musician whose quality and breadth of output is only matched by the incredible list of collaborators he's worked with. Whether making beats with MF Doom or writing songs with Adele, he's an artist that brings both originality and a timeless quality to everything that he does, as proved by his 6 Grammy Awards and countless other accolades. He rarely does interviews, preferring to focus on just making music, which makes me all the more proud to say my guest on The First Time this week is Danger Mouse. Just heard Lonely Boy by the Black Keys, an example of just one of the many times the band collaborated with the man born Brian Burton. And collaboration will form a lot of this show. We'll hear about the peculiarities of working with MF Doom and Paul McCartney's thoughts on his breakthrough record, The Grey Album, which borrowed the Beatles' White Album and paired it, of course, with Jay-Z. And we'll also dig a little deeper into his latest collaboration with the Roots MC, Black Thought, on the new album, Cheat Codes. But I started off by asking Brian, as I do with all my guests, when was the first time he was aware of music?
I think that my earliest is probably, I'd say probably Off the Wall was getting played in my house a lot. The Michael Jackson album. That's the first time I think I was really aware of it that I can remember. That it was a specific artist or a specific album or something like that was definitely, that was a huge, huge impact.
Was it the sound of the record or the image or just the whole thing? Did it kind of create a world for you?
I think it was the whole thing. And I think that it was just rare for something to happen where everybody in the family was into something. You know, my parents, I have older sibling, younger sibling. It was just on for years. Yeah, and that was unusual. So, yeah, you know, as a kid, you want to get your own thing. So I liked a lot of 80s pop. Was a big thing for me.
Okay, what was your first own thing then? What was your first thing that you were like, this belongs to me now?
The first time I bought an album was George Michael, I think, was Faith.
That's
like
a good
that.
Record.
It's a great record, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think I liked it because he had a song called I Want Your Sex. And I thought, I couldn't believe I was going to be able to buy this as a 9-year-old, but they let me, so, or however old I was.
Change your mind.
remember the Grease soundtrack getting played a lot. You know, it was a lot of pop stuff, you know. It was it definitely was not something I was using as an identity thing. It was just music. It wasn't until 10, 11, 12 I started listening to hair metal and whatever was around me at the time, what other kids were listening to, and that's what you start to identify music with your social groups and things like that.
I read that in an interview that there was a bit of a hair metal thing around. Was there anybody specifically that
you had a
passion?
I liked Guns N' Roses. I think I would have liked Metallica for a minute or something like that. But it was
a tribal thing, yeah?
Yeah, it really was. And I learned a really big lesson, which was if you listen to something enough, there's steep learning curves. You can kind of get into something if it's got something there, even if you're not used to it or doesn't happen right away. If you listen enough, a lot of times it will start to make sense. People. And I did kind of the same thing later on when I started listening mostly to hip hop, except for that was a lot easier.
What was your first exposure to hip hop then?
The first exposure would have been early, you know, I had an older sister. So in the 80s, right when, you know, we would watch the movies like Beat Street and Breakin' 2, all that kind of stuff. It was mostly through some of the movies and then what was on the radio and my sister bringing home stuff. But some of the first stuff I really, really remember liking was Dougie Fresh and Slick Rick and things like that. And Run DMC was something I remember. I really, really liked Run DMC. I used to wait around next to the radio with the tape player waiting to record King of Rock and stuff like that. That was on the radio. So that was my first real exposure to it. But then I got more into the more rock and roll stuff. And then not until I moved to the South, to Atlanta, I got really into hip hop. It was just part of the culture, it was part of what was there. And it was very natural. It was great. So that's all I listened to for middle school, high school.
I'm the king of rock. There is none higher. Sucker MCs should call me sire. To burn my kingdom, you must choose fire. I won't stop rocking till I retire.
Now we rock dog parties and come correct. All cuts are on time and rhymes connect. Got the right to vote and we'll elect. And other rappers can't stand us, but give us respect.
You went to, this might go back a bit, the first show that like you saw and thought this is good, I like this.
Well, that those two things didn't happen at the same time.
That was a terrible show and a great show. Okay.
Well, the first gig I went to that I can remember, we didn't go to shows as a family or anything like that. I remember taking a girl to see Janet Jackson in high school, and that was the first show. I was at an arena.
Wow.
And I wasn't listening to a lot of Janet Jackson at the time, but the girl was. And then after that, I didn't really see many until I was in college. And I happened to go to a little place called Athens, Georgia, which is a great music city. And I didn't know that until I got there. So a lot of people I met when I tried to get into the music and art scene kind of thing, there was a lot of going to small gigs and seeing people play. And that's what really opened me up into that music was art, and that you could make all kinds of music that had no purpose for being on the radio or other things. There's lots of different levels of it. And I didn't understand that early on. You know, I just thought music was entertainment. I had no desire to be an entertainer. But when I looked at it from the artsy kind of point of view, where you can make things for purposes and reasons that have nothing to do with the other stuff, I was all in.
Was there a specific band or artist that you saw that, like...
Not from what I saw, no. It would have just been from listening. Yeah, it was just from listening to lots of different music at the time. And I did see some gigs, some smaller acts, and, you know, you see a band and their name is Burger Time. You go, they're not trying to really be in the name and lights. There was a lot of silly, fun art rock stuff, you know, kind of like, yeah, kind of art school kind of things going on at the time. And I was just attracted to that in general.
When it comes to kind of recording and making stuff, you pretty much totally self-taught. You got wires and put them together and made cables happen. Yeah. You weren't like an assistant tape op anywhere.
No, nothing like that. I'm still not really an engineer right now. I was a bedroom person. Because a lot of these bands, that's what they were doing. A lot of the Elephant Six bands that some people may or may not know, like Olivia Tremor Control, Elf Power, Neutral Milk Hotel. There were a lot of bands that were making stuff with 4 tracks and 8 tracks, and those were affordable. And they were doing it at a level where they were getting some national attention. And I thought, well, you can do it that way. I can get my dorm room and get a 4-track and start messing with stuff too. And so, and also you do it that way. You're not embarrassed. You know, you're not in a real studio where people can see that you don't know what you're doing. You can just keep going over and over and over again and keep trying over and over again.
What a beautiful face I have found in this place that is circling all around the sun. What a beautiful dream that could flash on the screen in a blink of an eye and be gone from me. Soft and sweet, let me hold it close and keep it here with me. And one day we will die and our ashes will fly from the aeroplane over the sea. But for now we are young, let us lay in the sun and count every beautiful thing we can see. Love to be in the arms of all I'm keeping here.
There's something good about constantly problem solving. Oh, I want to do this. How do I do this? I'll keep trying till I can do that. And that's often, do you think it stood you in good stead?
I think the good thing about doing stuff before you know what you're doing is you don't realize how many options there really are. You know, you don't know. And when you're more taught route, you're learning, they're trying to tell you all these things. You learn all these things and there's all these possibilities. And then that can paralyze you. And I think I didn't know enough to be paralyzed. I just did stuff. I didn't know, you know, it took me a long time to understand some very basic things. But by the time I did, I had already made lots of stuff. And once you get the bug for making things, you learn a lot more. It's good to learn the lessons on your own from your experiences, not from what someone's telling you. It just stays with you more.
What a beautiful place I have found in this place that is circling all around the sun.
I find it fascinating that you didn't hear the Beatles till you were 18. I kind of love that because it's like...
None of it. The Beatles, Hendrix, Pink Floyd, The Doors, nothing. I mean, all the classic rock stuff that there's nothing cliched or unromantic about it for me because I didn't... It wasn't around me. It wasn't my parents' music. It wasn't anything like that.
That's kind of cool.
It was great. I felt like I was kind of going through the late 60s in my teens because that's how I was discovering things. And it was all new to me and it was great. And yeah, it wasn't as embarrassing as it may seem. It was mostly me by myself with headphones or in my dorm room or something like that going through it.
I don't think it's embarrassing. I think it's great. I think there's something about those things that can be, you can take them for granted. And then kind of like, was it they say that Picasso could draw like Michelangelo when he was 15 and then spend the rest of his life trying to unlearn, start to draw like a kid.
Yeah.
If you grow up with all these things around you constantly, you spend quite a lot of time as you get older trying to listen to them without context and without the baggage and listen to them fresh every time. So I guess I think it's kind of cool.
It was great. Great for me because I never really had a... I never had any illusions that I would be the person in the poster on the wall because it was too late. So I felt like when I was making music, I loved the music itself. And I never had illusions I could be that person. So, you know, when I made ideas, you know, I was sampling, I was taking things from places. And so I think what would happen is I had guys in dorm rooms next to me who had been playing guitar since they were 10. They loved Led Zeppelin and things like that. And when they tried to do ideas of music and stuff they were doing and they played it for people, if someone didn't, if they didn't like it, they'd be crushed or they'd be worried, or I don't know, or I'm no good, because they were looking at, you know, Jimmy Page and thinking, I want to be him or Jimi Hendrix. And I was taking stuff. I was like, I was grabbing the drums from here, I was grabbing the guitars from here. So I only took stuff I already knew I loved. That's where my confidence came from. And so confidence is the most important thing when you're making art, really. And so when I finished something, it was made up of things I already knew I loved. So if someone didn't like it, I would just thought, well, I would hate to think what you would take, because this is the best part or this is that, you know. So I never thought it was me that people were loving, that my ideas, they were.
Yeah.
So I didn't take it personally. I wasn't crushed when I was making all this bad stuff in the beginning, when I was playing it for myself or other people. I didn't take it. So yeah, it wasn't me. Whereas if you are sitting there, it's just you and a guitar and you're putting an idea down, you're bound to be wrecked, you know, and you're not going to be very good in the beginning usually either. For some people, you happen to be good and for a minute, but it's hard to stay consistent with that.
Pink Floyd, that was another thing as well. There was the kind of psych world.
It was the first thing, the first thing I had heard that kind of set this whole thing off was Wish You Were Here. I was in a bar and I heard Wish You Were Here and asked the bartender what it was, and he looked at me like I was crazy. And I had known the name and the band name Pink Floyd. I'd seen it on shirts and heard of it, but this was right in the beginning of when I was in college, and I was away from the town I was from and the group of friends and kids and the social environment I was from, where I would have never wanted them to know that I ever listened to all the 80s bands that were the men dressed like women and things like that. Like, I didn't want them to know any of that stuff. So I would have stayed away from anything that was too rock and roll for social purposes. So
sure.
I was out of that environment and I heard this and I was like, this is what Pink Floyd sounds like. I thought it would have been something very heavy and very, you know, different thing, you know, but it was very blues-based and beautiful and cinematic and the whole thing. And I was like, you know, and I saw the album had come out the same year I was born, and I took that long to listen to it because I was afraid of what people would think of me. And I thought, man, and you know, right when you're in college, you just shed everything if you're lucky, if you can, you know, and I did.
Yeah.
And I was like, what have I been doing? So I went and bought the album the next day, and then a couple years later, bought all of them. Bought Metal, bought Dark Side and Adam Heart Mother and everything, and I just got way into it, and then I started making music shortly after.
So you think you can tell heaven from hell, blue skies from pain? Can you tell a green breathe?
Kraftwerk. Kraftwerk's someone, talking about sound, Kraftwerk's someone that you've kind of name-checked as being kind of important to how you approach your work.
Yeah, I think that when I first moved to the South, I listened to what people called booty shake music, which was a lot of Miami bass stuff, and it was much less about the rapping, much more just about the beats and the music, and it was, well, not the music, but dancing. It was a lot of really fast music, and a lot of it was influenced or just straight taken from Kraftwerk and a lot of other, like Cybertron and things like that. And I didn't know it at the time, so I didn't realize I had been influenced by this stuff until much later, until I was in college and really diving deep into all the music stuff, and I realized that so much of the stuff I'd been into had come from essentially this one band, or at least you could draw a lot of connections back to Kraftwerk in that way. And I do really like the music a lot as a whole. I don't listen to a lot of Kraftwerk albums the way I would, you know, Beatles albums or things like that right now still. But I always have to remind myself to just put stuff on like that. But it is still a very big influence musically and things that I've done over the years. Yeah, I still do love them. And I've seen them a couple of times live. And I just think they're probably one of the most influential bands ever, probably, and maybe as big as the Beatles in some ways, based on hip hop and electronic music that it influenced.
There's always going to be these questions that people ask you, and you're probably going to go, oh, do I have to do it again? With the Grey album, actually, yeah. The Grey album, have you ever spoken to Paul McCartney about it? That's a good question about something you know about the record, but have you ever spoken to him about it?
We've spoken.
Hey, that's cool.
Not so much about the Grey album, I guess you could say. It was mentioned in the first conversation we had. He made a joke about it.
What did he say?
God, I don't remember specifically. I think he said something like, we caused quite a fuss, didn't we? Or something like that. And I thought it was more me. I was the one who got more of a fuss. But it was just he made a quick joke about it. And we didn't really talk about it in itself so much. But it was a long time later that I had met him. It wasn't at the time of.
Yeah. Did you really do it in 2 weeks, or is that just one of those legends that's coming?
No, it was 2 weeks. It was quick because I was so worried that somebody else was doing the same thing. It was such an easy idea. I just thought, somebody else is going to pick up on this and come out with it before I do. So I was going to do the Grey song or something like that. And as I was figuring it out, I was realizing I could maybe do the whole thing, that would have more of an impact. And then once I did, I just was trying to speed to get there and finish it. And I just was kind of obsessed with it. And but I did really, you know, this was the beginnings of the internet really being with music. It was just post Napster and it was really exploding. And so I just assumed there could be somebody on the other side of the world doing the same thing and maybe even better and come out with it. And it would be a waste if I didn't hurry up and finish it.
So that was the motivation.
It was kind of, it was, that was the, I think, part of the intensity of it. Yeah. And it's good because if I put this down, I wouldn't have come back. It was very labor intensive.
But it still sounds good.
Parts of it do, yeah. I think that it was a worthy experiment, and I look at it as an art project still, and I think some of it was more successful than others, but the limitations is what I had. I couldn't, it really was the best I could do. I knew that. I still think that, for better or for worse.
Limitations are good, though. This is the thing, isn't it?
They can be, yeah.
They say they never really miss you till you dead or you gone. So on that note, I'm leaving after the song. So you ain't gotta feel no way about Jay so long. But at least let me tell you why I'm this way. Hold on. Poets conceived by Gloria Carter and Agnes Reed, who made love under the sycamore tree, which makes me a more sicker MC. And my mama would claim at 10 pounds when I was born, I didn't give her no pain. Although through the years I gave her her fish, yeah. I gave her a first real scare. I made it from birth when I got here. She knows my purpose wasn't purpose. I ain't perfect, I care. But I feel worthless cause my shirts wasn't matching my gear. Now I'm just scratching the surface cause what's buried under there was a kid torn apart once his pop disappeared. I went to school, got good grades, could behave when I wanted. But I had demons deep inside that were raised when confronted. Hold on.
Sean was a very shy child growing up. He was into sports, and a funny story is, at four, he taught himself how to ride a bike. A two-wheel at that. Isn't that special? But I noticed a change in him when me and my husband broke up.
Now all the teachers couldn't reach me and my mama couldn't beat me hard enough to match the pain of my pop not seeing me. So with that disdain in my membrane, got on my pimp game. Word, my defense came. Then the Haven introduced me to the game. Spanish Jose introduced me to Kane. I'm a hustler now, my gear is in and I'm in the in crowd. And all the wavy light-skinned girls are loving me now. My self-esteem went through the roof, man, I got my swag. Got a Rover from this girl when the man got back. Plus I hit my mama with cash from a show that I had. Supposedly knowing nobody paid jazz, whack ass. I'm getting ahead of myself by the way I can rap. That came second to me moving this crack. Give me a second, I swear, I would say about my rap career. The 96 came, I'm here. Goodbye.
Sean used to be in the kitchen beating on the table and rapping and at the wee hours of the morning. And then I brought him a boombox and his sisters and brothers said that he would drive them nuts. But that was my way to keep him close to me and out of trouble.
Goodbye to the game, all the spoils, the adrenaline rush. Your blood boils, you in a spot, knowing cops can rush. And you in a drop, you so easy to touch. No 2 days are alike, except the first of 15 pretty much. And trust, it's a word you seldom hear from us. Hustlers, we don't sleep, we rest one eye up. And the drought can define a man when the well dries up. You learn to work the water, without work you thirst till you die. Yep. Get tired of a product, the little brothers ring fingers get cut up to show mothers they really got them. And this is the stress I live with till I decided to try this rap for a living. I pray I'm forgiven for every bad decision I made, every sister I played. Cause I'm still paranoid to this day, and it's nobody's fault. I made the decisions I made. This is the life I chose, or rather the life that chose me. If you can't respect that, your whole perspective is whack. Maybe you love me when I fade to black. If you can't respect that, your whole perspective is whack. Maybe you love me when I black.
That was December 4th from the Grey album by Danger Mouse. Respectful nods both to the Beatles and Jay-Z. We'll be back with more from Danger Mouse as he recalls working with Gorillaz and his newest release, the Cheat Codes album, which he's created with Roots MC Black Thought. But first, it's time for the 6 Music News.
6 Music. BBC Radio 6 Music.
BBC News at 1:30. I'm Claire Ronakers. Pakistan has said a landmark agreement reached at climate talks in Egypt restores the credibility of the COP process. Delegates agreed to set up a fund to help vulnerable countries, including Pakistan, which had suffered damage caused by global warming. The deal has been hailed by many campaigners as historic, although much of the detail is yet to be thrashed out. but there was little progress on limiting the global temperature rise to 1.5 degrees, much to the disappointment of the EU's Frans Timmermans.
It could have been a much bigger success if we had also done more on reducing our emissions. I mean, look at what's happened in Pakistan, look at the droughts. Just imagine if we overshoot the 1.5, if we go for 2 or even over 2. If we don't speed up, the trajectory is, I think, 2.4 right now. And that is unacceptable. We really need to speed up.
A shooting at a gay nightclub in the US state of Colorado has killed 5 people and injured at least 18. The club said it was devastated by what it called a hate attack. The Health Secretary, Steve Barclay, says the government hasn't abandoned promised social care reforms in England. He's been defending a delay in introducing a spending cap for individuals. The Chancellor's announced £2.8 billion extra for social care next year, rising to £4.7 billion the year after. Shadow Health Secretary Jonathan Ashworth told the BBC's Sunday with Laura Kunzberg that Labour's plan for funding the NHS would involve stimulating economic growth.
When we are in government, we'll make a full assessment of the needs of the NHS and fund it properly. But you've got to grow your economy. And one of the ways in which you grow your economy, particularly after 10 years or 12 years of this very poor economic performance under the Conservatives, is that we've got to invest in jobs and skills. So we'll create new jobs by green industrial investment in renewables and in hydrogen, but we'll also help more people move into work.
The International Atomic Energy Agency has criticised fresh attacks on the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant in southern Ukraine. The sites currently occupied by Russian forces. Kiev and Moscow blame each other. The opening ceremony for the first Football World Cup in the Middle East gets underway shortly, with the first match kicking off in 2.5 hours. England face Iran tomorrow, while Wales play the USA. These fans have travelled to Qatar for the tournament.
Still getting over my jet lag, but yeah, so far I've been good. Seen a few Wales lads around and generally feeling positive about the tournament. Yeah, I reckon we'll get out of the group, hopefully get a win over the English as well, and then we'll see where we go from there.
I can probably see Wales and USA fighting out for the second place in the group, but then again, you never know with England, so yeah, we could throw it all away again.
And a charity's warning that removing cars from canals is costing it tens of thousands of pounds, which it can't afford. 3 have been dumped in waterways in the West Midlands in the past week, which the Canal and River Trust said would cost £30,000 in cranes and lifting equipment to remove. That's 6 Music News. Your next update's at 2:30.
BBC Radio 6 Music.
remember when they used to dance. All I wanna do is dance.
Hello, I'm Matt Everett, and welcome back to The First Time here on Six Music and BBC Sounds. And my guest this week is the producer, songwriter and musician, Danger Mouse. And you just heard Dirty Harry from Gorilla's second album, Demon Days, a record produced by Danger Mouse. In fact, it was one of his first mainstream production jobs from 2005. So let's jump back into our conversation as I asked him what his first impressions were of Gorilla's mastermind, Damon Albarn.
I knew of Blur. I was a fan of Blur. You know, I worked at the record store in college, and I really liked Blur. I wasn't so into Gorillaz. I knew of the first Gorillaz album. I liked a couple of things I had heard, but I didn't really get into it. And so when I met Damon, it was right after the Grey album, and we met in London to see about working on a Gorillaz album. And I, at the time, I just wasn't really sure that was the right thing, because I was really worried about, because the Grey album wasn't supposed to be so big, and I didn't want it to derail what I was already doing, because I had already started working with CeeLo on Gnarls Barkley and MF Doom on the Danger Doom album. So I had those things going before I did the Grey album, and I was like, I don't want to be the remix guy. I don't want to be, you know, this thing. And so I didn't know what Damon wanted me to do. I didn't want to do remixes and things that were what people would have called mashups at the time, which I didn't feel like I was part of in any way. I didn't know what he really wanted me to do. And I met him, and you know, we got on. You know, we just did. It was definitely the best thing that could have happened to me at the time. You know, I learned more from him than any other person I ever worked with. He gave me a lot of confidence, and I just learned a lot about songwriting and how to do things, and he reinforced the work ethic as well. You know, we went into work every day, and I don't know, he really just made me a part of his group and just really got behind me, and that was really, really, really big for me. I didn't realize it at the time, but looking back on it, I understand how big a deal it was for him to have done that at that time. Yeah, it was good.
Subtle touch, cuddle clutch. Is this thing on like the fling with Mrs. King Kong this spring gone? Sing a song of slap happy crappiness. He came to blow like it was strapped to his nappy chest. Surely I jest. The best on a wireless mic, not an eye test. Yet I digress. But why stress? Try and remember when. Maybe bit the tender skinned babysitter Gwendolyn. The type to hit and run and go tell a friend. Word to El Muerto, Cucaracha, exoskeleton. He know, flow like interstellar wind. Toe a rap gin by his toe into hell again. 1-2 check, me too. Loose wreck, see through your gooseneck EQ.
His name's Doom. They wonder just who is he, but don't worry. Believe me, he'll get busy when it comes to poetry. He's got plenty, la la la.
You mentioned Danger Doom. What do you remember from doing that Mouse and the Mask album? Because once again, it's just such a great piece of work.
I think the main thing that I remember would be Doom coming to, I was living in Los Angeles at the time, and Doom would come to work on the album, and I wouldn't see him for days, and he'd be in the room right next door to mine, and he just wouldn't come out. And
really?
That would be, yeah, at all hours of the night, you'd hear him maybe making some food or something, and then you get up, you go out to go hang out with or talk to Doom, and he'd be back in his room again, and and he wouldn't use the studio that we had in the house to record. He just did it all. He bought his own equipment and recorded it in the bedroom on his own. So I'd be next door making beats, and he'd be recording his own vocals and his own stuff in the next room next door, and I really just couldn't tell what he was going to do. And sometimes he'd be doing that, and when it was time for him to leave, he didn't have anything. He'd say, oh, none of it's going to work. Or the next time he'd have three or four songs. So that was the main thing I remember. And meeting up with him in Georgia, just at little Applebee's bar and grills kind of things, and just talking about everything but hip hop. And those are the main things. It wasn't so much the album itself that I remember. It was just the process and just him, because there were just rich times. We didn't have a lot of time together after that.
Yeah. It must be funny seeing like a friend become like the kind of legend, the image, and you're like, oh, that's just.
He was definitely that before we got to know each other. He was already kind of really getting to that place. Yeah, I'll tell you a funny story where the first time I met Doom, I was trying to get him to appear on as a feature verse on an album I was doing, and so I was in Los Angeles, and so I had to go through two or three people just to find him, and they said, you know, you got to go talk to him in person, otherwise he won't do it. And so he was playing a show in Santa Monica, so I went out by myself to this show, and I just started to really discover him. I didn't really know a lot about him at the time, and I'm at this little bar, and there's maybe 100 people waiting to go to the other room, and I mean, it's buzzing like I've never seen before for a small hip-hop show. I've seen it with rock shows, but maybe not even that much, but it was people. I mean, the kids were just freaking out that, man, he's gonna be here, and I'm thinking, yeah, you paid money for of course he's gonna be here. You're at his show. I don't get what's so exciting about this. And so I'm talking to this guy at the bar about it, you know, about, you know, this Doom thing and the rabid fans and all this other stuff. And he's getting drinks, and we're talking about it while we're watching the whole thing. And then I watch the show, and he comes out and puts CD player down by himself and just hits the button. It's like beep beep, and just starts rapping over top of his own instrumentals, and people go nuts. And after the show, I'm trying to get backstage, and everybody, other people are too, and I finally get on the phone, and he's already back at the hotel, so I have to run around, and he has to change hotels a couple of times because fans were following him or something.
Wow.
So by the time I get to the hotel and I get to the room, the door opens up, it's this huge, you know, 6'5", 400-pound guy, looks like he's gonna beat me down for trying to even come to the door. And I explained who I was, and then he smiled and opened up, and I go in and I see the guy sitting in the room in his Doom, and it's the same guy I was talking to at the bar.
Yes.
Nobody there knew it was him. He just, when he had his mask off, I guess they didn't have the liquor he wanted upstairs, so he came down right in front of all his fans and got a drink, and nobody knew it was him. And I had been talking to him, and he was just messing with me, I guess. So he already had that level of mystery and kind of people really, really going crazy for him back then. And that was right in the beginning. That must have been 2003, I think.
Hey, if I may interject, rap these days is like a pain up in the neck. Cornier and phonier than a play fight. Take two of these and don't phone me on a late night. The beat won't fail me with more rhymes than times he washes hands and feet daily. And all that kerosene ain't cheap. Villain been deep since a teenage creep peep. He always was a gentleman and kept a pen and a pencil in his mental den. Right there next to where the Rolodex was before it turned up all burnt by his solar plexus. He don't know his own strength when he's on the bonus like the microphone's length and width. Ain't it funky like dingy socks? Feel the full effect off cassette in your Benzy box.
His name's Doom. They wonder just who is he, but don't worry. Believe me, he'll get busy when it comes to poetry. He's got plenty, la la la.
This is for me. This question is definitely for me. I was listening to Dark Knight of the Soul again.
Mm-hmm.
I'd kind of like, I got really obsessed by that record for a while because it's so interesting. There's so much going on. That must have been to immerse yourself in all those different people and different working techniques and different, everybody bringing such a different element to each track. That must have been like a joy, or was it a nightmare trying to make it all kind of feel like one record?
No, it kind of came on its own, where I had worked with Mark Linkus, Sparkhorse, on his album, and we had some of the ideas I really loved. He didn't think he could pull off vocally, and when we were done with his album, he wanted to keep working, but he really didn't want to sing. And I said, well, I don't sing, so I know what you mean, you know, so why don't we take some of these ideas and we can get somebody else to sing them? And he said, you know, you can do that? And it's like, yeah, that's what I do all the time. I never have to do the hard part. And so we started going to people we knew one by one, and I you know, I said, this is kind of how we do it in hip hop. You make the beat and you have somebody rap over it, so we can have them sing over it. So for most of it, we didn't really even have the top line melodies or anything. We would put together the songs the way I would put together a beat, and I explained that to him, and so that's how we did it.
Right.
And so these were completed pieces of music that had bridges and chorus parts and all this stuff, but nothing on top. And then we just started one by one sending them to people, and then they would put their idea down and send it back to us. So I was only in the studio with a few of the people when it was time to do the song, put the songs together. I think I was there with Julian. I was there with Frank Black, a few of the people on there. But yeah, they would send the stuff back. And the funny thing happened was that, you know, the music consistently brought out really sad, dark music from everybody. And they had, none of them had heard anybody else's lyrics, but man, they were all really dark and sad. And I guess that's what the music brought out. It was consistent in that way.
Working with, like, so there's been some really big name artists, and it's kind of interesting because if you're working with like U2 or you're working with Adele, the kind of music has to do a certain job. I'm trying to explain this in a way that's, it's never going to be My Life in the Bush of Ghosts or like a Dr. Octagon album, because those artists can't do that really, because the expectations and the role that they're playing is different. I'm making it sound as if they're not experimental, these people, and they are, but you know what I mean? It's like there is, these things have a job to do, and the job to do is often to connect with loads and loads and loads of people, which is amazing if you can have the capability to do that. But it's, I just wonder whether that is a constraint, or whether actually, like we're talking about, like having limitations, whether that's a good thing and it drives you in a certain direction. Am I making myself?
Yeah, I understand.
You see what I'm
saying?
Trying to say? Yeah,
I think so. Yeah, I think so. For myself, it does come up sometimes. It can be a thought, but it has to really, for me, it's usually first things first. You know, it's got to satisfy me personally. It's got to be something I am behind, because I learned from all this time that you shouldn't try to guess what the public's going to like and what they're not going to like. It doesn't usually go very well, especially if you're going to bet something on that. I wouldn't do that. I think you're much better off having the public not like something that you love, you know, than having them not like something that you don't love. You know,
okay,
and that's not a good trade-off. So it can be difficult to work with people and have them be in that mind state of not worrying. You know, it's easy for me to not worry, but they're the ones who have to go in front of all these people and have those expectations. So that is tough. And I am not usually very sensitive to it when we work together, and that's on me. To be honest about it, you know, I just want to make something that I like myself, and that I think if I'm working with somebody, it's because there's something about them that I love and I want to hear more of that. And that might not be the thing that the rest of the world loves. I don't know. And so that's what I go in trying to do. And if they let me make a whole lot of that, great. if they don't, it usually becomes a bit of an issue, or you just don't get a lot of, you don't finish a lot of things, because it's just, I can't finish something in the way that's going to satisfy other people. It's still got to satisfy me. It's just kind of how, it's just how I work. It's just the thing that I'm, that's what I do. And it's not for everybody.
Yeah. I'm sick, no lymph nodes are swollen. They told me even when the record skipped, keep it rolling on the shoulder like a California highway patrolman. Launch codes were stolen and sold by Ed Snowden. I fled to Rome and told him to dress me as a Roman. I'm still in photos posing with my own omen. A thumping kicker for me to slam like Hulk Hogan. It's something like a plain bumper sticker, no slogan. This something for the them back and forth commuters who never knew the difference in laws and jurisprudence. I feel as though it's safe to assume that to the students and I can prove it to the way that me and Doom do this. You checking the top two of a thousand intelligent.
We should talk about Cheat Codes. We should talk about the record.
Sure.
With Black Thought, which is, I mean, first of all, it's a brilliant record. Second of all, people are losing their minds over it, which must be really nice to do a piece of work and have everybody really go at it with like so much affection and so much appreciation, because this was a long time coming, wasn't it? This has been gestating is the word for quite a while, I believe.
Yeah, and it is good. It feels good that people are really into it. I think that this was definitely an album that was made for myself and for Tariq both. Black Thought, you know, there was a temptation, I think, you know, to try to acknowledge a little bit of what's happening now musically. Mm-hmm. But that just wasn't going to work, and we realized that after a little while that we just need to make this record for ourselves. I just don't think there was any expectation that it would catch on, and not that it has caught on in any real mainstream way. But I mean, there definitely, we knew there would be fans for it, but we'd really just made it for ourselves. It was, you know, Black Thought was my favorite rapper growing up, and so I just thought, well, what would the younger me? What would I want to hear from that? Like, what kind of record would I want to make or what I want to hear? And that was the main thing. It was trying to get to that, I guess. And yeah, I don't know what's going to happen with it at this point. Hopefully we'll make more and people will be into that in their own way, I guess. But it really did accomplish what we were trying to do. It just took a lot longer. You know, we jumped right in. We started in 2005, but then none of the stuff from the earlier sessions had anything to do with what we wound up doing. We just, we really started properly in 2018 on this particular album, and the pandemic really helped it to get much better, because we thought we were pretty much done. But then when we had those extra couple of years, we went in there and really, really dug in and made it. We just got much more harsh. Like, you know, we did almost probably twice as many songs, maybe more, and only used, you know, the best 12 that we thought would work as an album.
I like that. We just put an extra couple of years on the session.
Yeah, it really was. I thought we were done right before the whole thing started. I thought, well, we just got to finish up a couple little things, and some of our best stuff came in that last couple of years. And also we just refined the stuff we already had, and you know, he spent a lot of time on it and so did I, and it just really was great to be able to go in with a partner who wanted to do the work. You know, and this was never going to be a highly profitable thing or anything like that. Not for the time and energy we were putting into it. It just wasn't. It was just going to be for us, and we just kept going with it.
The biology teacher said we used to be amoebas. The neighborhood preacher said we emerged from the ether. We converged from urethra and struck gold, Eureka. The morning star Tariq, I was born to be a teacher. Whether scorpion or a frog, the nature of the creature is to evolve. Though it's the savage beast we truly are. My words should be studied up in Berkeley and Juilliard. All my bars is hard as solid gold bullion. My name in the Quran like the kingdom of Suleiman. You done lost your mind trying to call me a... 215 with folks fight depression and wives pack protection. Lives lack direction. I'm a king. I'm dipped in God's black complexion. Survival of the fittest is the natural selection. I'll bear down on the scene like I'm Saladin. The stone courage esteem is aquamarine. You mask how you really feel like it's Halloween when they ask how you really feel about my machine. In the class that I'm only in, alien horsepower like a Mongolian trying to find soul again.
kind of cool seeing people say, like, oh, you know, he's always been the best. Now lots of other people are going to realize he's the best, which is kind of sweet.
That was always the hope for me. It was like, maybe this will expose him even more. It'll push him up to that front of the line in a little bit of a ways. That would have been a great outcome. And hopefully that is something that's coming.
So what's next? I mean, obviously there's things happening. Obviously there's some things you can talk about, some things you cannot talk about.
I mean, right now, the only thing that I can talk about that's coming next is the Broken Bells album, which is finished and done finally. That's taken a long time as well. But yeah, I think the last couple of years, just, you know, I spent so much time listening to the work before it's come out, that there's a lot of time to really refine that I don't usually take. And I think it paid off with the Black Thought album, but we'll see what happens with the Broken Bells album. I mean, I think, you know, James and I are really happy with it. And, you know, it's a very, I guess you could say it's a little bit of an eclectic album, but it's pretty heavy for the most part.
Heavy lyrically, heavy musically, heavy everything.
Yeah, for the most part it is. Yeah, that's just where we are right now, I guess.
The final thing we ask everybody is what's the last track that we should play? We're going to play out on something. It can be something of yours, something of someone else's, something you've loved your whole life or heard this morning. What should we finish on?
This album I've been listening to a whole lot is this guy Sam Cohen, and he has a song called Another World, and I've been listening to the whole album a lot. There's an album called Slow Fawn, which is great. That song Another World is really good. Might as well play that one. Maybe it's something that people haven't heard.
Then that's the song we'll finish on. It's been really good to speak to you, man. Thank you.
You too.
Sam Cohen with Another World, featured on his album from this year, Slow Fawn. The final choice of my guest on the first time this week, Danger Mouse. We'll be back next Sunday with the voice of AC/DC, Brian Johnson. A glorious conversation that goes from scout singing competitions to the miracle of Brian regaining his hearing, all cut through with characteristic northeast humour. Until then, my name is Matt Everett. Thanks for listening.